Could you give me a drink, please?
Shirley Clark, Portrait of Jason, Roll One Sound Lock.
Okay, Jason. Go.
My name is Jason Holliday. My name is Jason Holliday. My name is Aaron Payne. I know he's around when the sky and the ground start in ringing. Everyone in New York has a gimmick. So I found out that mine was hustling. I hear in advance. Some people like museums and they spend all day looking at pictures. I spend all day looking at people. It's the same form of art. And I can make you feel that you're the most desirable human being that ever walked this earth.
Is the only music that makes me dance.
Hey everybody, this is Adam Chartoff, your host of Filmwax Radio. That opening clip you just heard was from a documentary, a classic documentary called Portrait of Jason, which was directed by Shirley Clark in 1967. On the night of December 2nd, 1966, Shirley Clark and a tiny crew convened in her apartment at the Hotel Chelsea to make a film. There for 12 straight hours, they filmed the one and only Jason Holliday as he spun tales, sang, donned costumes, and reminisced about good times and bad behavior as a gay hustler sometimes, houseboy, and aspiring cabaret performer. It's become a classic film. More recently, it was restored and reissued, and finally, it will be available for streaming on Fandor as of Friday, June the 19th. So you will not want to miss this stunning, incredible documentary. And today on this episode is an interesting turn because is the day before, on Thursday the 18th, having its worldwide premiere at BAM Cinema Fest in Brooklyn, a fictional version or a fictional account of that day, of that 12-hour shoot, what might have gone on in that apartment in the Hotel Chelsea, as interpreted and as invented by the filmmaker Stephen Winter, who is going to be on this episode. That film is called Jason and Shirley and has a stunning series and it has some stunning performances. The actor Jack Waters plays Jason Holliday in an incredible, stunning interpretation. The artist Sarah Schulman plays Shirley Clark. A great performance, and everybody in this film, and it's shot in such a way to make it look like it was all shot back many years ago. It's a peculiar, unique, but really profoundly entertaining and moving film. Again, that's called Jason and Shirley, and you know, with any luck, it too will be available on Fandor one of these days, but in the meantime, look for it at a local festival near you soon. We'll keep up with Stephen. But here now is, again, the filmmaker Stephen Winter regarding his film, which is called Jason and Shirley. Again, it premieres at BAM Cinema Fest on Thursday the 18th. On the next day, first thing in the morning, you can watch Portrait of Jason, which is will have its premiere here on Fandor on Friday the 19th. So right now, my conversation with Stephen Winter. Basically, there's this groundbreaking classic documentary called A Portrait of Jason.
Yes.
By Shirley Clark. It was more than a cult classic. It sort of evolved into a cult classic of sorts, but it was a time when, you know, documentaries weren't nearly as ubiquitous. I mean, not by a
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so when it came out, she had made two features, narrative features before, okay.
Yes.
And this was her foray into documentary. And just so right out of the gate, people understand the nature of what you made, which is Jason and Shirley, which is a narrative version of the day that she shot this documentary.
Yes.
Like, taken probably from existing anecdotes and partly maybe you filled in with your imagination. I don't know.
All my imagination.
All your imagination.
Yes.
So that's even more impressive. this. So she was living in the Chelsea Hotel.
Yes.
And she invited Jason, who she knew through a mutual friend.
Carly,
who's an actor.
And her lover.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. See, it gets more nuanced. I started, but you can finish it. I could easily finish it. The sort of the back story here, but
when
you'll do better job.
As inspired by Chelsea Girls, which Andy Warhol made using his factory superstars in a contrived situation, sort of acting things out, she thought, well, I'll do a film that is just about one person. And the person she selected was this guy, Jason Holliday, who was a notorious barfly and gadabout in the scene. He was black, he was gay, he was flamboyant, he was nearing middle age. He was in the life, in the sense, he was in the street life, and he worked as many things, a helper and a servant at times, but he was really a prostitute. And was friends with Miles Davis, but was also kind of destitute. And the kind of guy who was always at the bar or at the party telling the same 12 stories over and over again. So she said, I'll bring in Jason, film him telling his stories, and get him to reveal something of what is truth. You know, just him, total cinema verite, and he will talk about his life until he has some kind of emotional breakthrough. And that was what Portrait of Jason was. And it was a sensation in the 1967 when it came out.
As someone who obviously whose flamboyant style of storytelling became more, as he became more lubricated,
mm-hmm.
through alcohol or other stimulants, he was great in terms of telling stories. What she was trying to do is cut through.
Yes.
I mean, according to her.
Yeah.
She's trying to cut through and find where's the pain and where is the source of all these.
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
He really resisted that initially.
It would appear. Like,
yeah. We're still talking about the original
source. The original one.
Which is the documentary.
Yes. He seemed to be happy to tell his stories, and he seemed to happy to sort of show off and be shocking in body.
Yes.
And he was fabulous. It's the first, you know, how Queen Snap? It's the first Snap on record.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, he's the first Snap Queen ever to be recorded.
Right.
But he's chain smoking the whole time. He's drinking the whole time. And he's depressed. You can tell he's depressed. He's hunched over. He wears dark glasses or Coke glasses. He has the air of somebody who's been defeated and who is struggling through in that sort of old school Judy Garland fashion of like smiling through your tears. But what Shirley wanted was something more. And what Jason, it would appear, was doing was trying to avoid being real by pretending to have some kind of a breakdown. Eventually, off-screen voices in the film start to yell at him, and we're not sure who they are. We know that Shirley's talking because she talks all the way through.
Yeah.
But then other voices start to talk. Jason gets more upset. He cries. He seems to cry. And it sort of ends in a puddle of tears, with Jason realizing he has no love in his life and everything is a sham, built on a sham. You know, it's intense, it's funny, it's mesmerizing, and it's dark. It's very dark.
Sure, sure. When did you see the Portrait of Jason originally? When were you introduced to it?
I first saw it at 21 when I was at NYU. Uh-huh. I was looking up films about gay hustlers, you know, sort of inspired by My Own Private Idaho and films like that. And I was like, what else is out there that has this sort of thing going on? And
is that just because you were in that very, you know, emotionally dramatic stage? Colleges, especially, you know, when you're first year or two of college, especially. No, it's that age where you're seeking out the damaged soul.
Oh, totally.
And
new queer cinema was happening. Yeah. Todd Haynes was happening.
Yeah. So the gay new wave.
And like, this is the early 90s. It's a,
yes.
You got to remember that the closet was still very big then.
Sure.
You know, there were people, every gay person or lesbian or queer person had some level of the closet in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so looking for gay material and queer content was a search, a true search that every person would undergo in their own way and, you know, and try to find what they could respond to.
Mm-hmm.
So as inspired by the lyrical and lush Private Idaho by Gus Van Sant, I decided to see what else was going on. And this one said gay and black in the card catalog. And it said gay and black in the card catalog. And so I looked at it. I pulled it out, put it on, and I was very shocked to see how stark it was, how strange it was.
I hadn't seen anything quite like that before.
And had never heard of it, because in the years between 1967, when the film was launched and was a sensation, and the 1990s, the film had fallen into this sort of anonymity, because gay audiences weren't claiming it because it was so dark. Black audiences weren't claiming it because it was
Segregated indie. It's icky. They don't want to maybe identify or associate, the association and identification with this.
Everybody was really into positive images back then.
Yeah.
And Jason is many things, but he is a drunk, chain-smoking prostitute in the Chelsea Hotel having a nervous breakdown.
And fun at parties.
And very fun at parties, maybe. But who might also take your silver. He doesn't have a respectable air about him. So only documentary people knew about the film, and cinema people, because it was considered an essential viewing.
Art cinema.
Yeah. But also because Shirley Clarke was a woman, she was overlooked in her day. She was overlooked after her day. And it wasn't really until the last 10 years that she was even included in the list of people who were significant in the Chelsea Hotel. She was there with Brendan Beenan and Arthur C. Clarke and all those dudes. But her name was never mentioned, you know.
Wow.
So they were both brilliant marginalized figures. But at the same time, when I first watched it as a kid, it was incredibly depressing, incredibly dark. Because when you, because even back then, you could look at a whole history of queer LGBTQ images in film and TV. You could criticize them here or there, but they're like 98% white. And then here's the one film that has a black gay guy as its lead. And not only has it been shoved under the rug, but it's depressing. It is hard to wrap your mind around. It takes at least three viewings to really get it. You don't want to have those three viewings in a row. You want to space them out over years. And as a biracial black gay person, it was a bit of a slap in the face to see like how with River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves, lovely white boys doing lovely white boy things in Portland or whatever, and I get black and white cinema verite, nervous breakdown, chain smoking, completely defeated, seemingly completely defeated Jason. It took me many years, like 20 years, to really like go back there again and again and see what more could be happening, which is where my film Jason and Shirley, the inspiration of that came from.
It sounds like a process of I mean, it may have come to you in a moment like, oh, wait, maybe there's a way of telling this story in this, you know, in a new way, like introducing this idea. What was the germ of that? Like of the realizing some years ago, I'm going to do a kind of a metafiction version of, you know, what happened that day.
Well, I'll humbly tell you that it was not my idea. I would never, ever have come to this. It was Sarah Schulman, the writer, journalist, an activist, a friend of mine, who had the idea to call me and say, what if Jack Waters, our mutual friend, played Jason, I play Shirley Clarke, and you write and direct a fictional film about that shoot day? And I had just finished working for a year on The Butler with Lee Daniels. I had been doing all the archive work that the film has. Everything is
Civil
on the
rights.
Yeah, everything is on the TV in The Butler. Anything that's on the radio is something that I pulled out. And Lee wanted me to watch everything. So I spent a year combing through every bit of civil rights footage there is. Some incredible stuff. Very intense to watch and to catalog and to make ready for him. So when she brought this idea to me, I was in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I was looking at everything that was going on then. And I went to sleep for a month after the show was over. Woke up and it was all there. I had done one piece of research prior to taking that month off. And I looked up Portrait of Jason, the making of. And I found out that it was a 12-hour shoot. A marathon 12-hour shoot. A fact that I had never considered before. Because the film has all these long takes. It gives you the impression, surely it was brilliant, in giving you the impression that the film was happening in real time. And so for this two-hour film, that might be of like just very minimal cuts have been made of it. But there were 10 hours of cuts. And I realized that if there are 10 hours of incident that is now lost to history, that's where the other Jason lives. That's where the person that I know he also had to have been in order to have survived in that time, yes, in that way.
Right.
Could have been located.
Yeah. So because, Shirley Clark is long dead.
Yes.
She died in the 90s.
Yes.
Jason died
a year later.
A year. She outlived him.
He outlived her.
That's what I meant. He outlived her by like a year, yeah. I think, right? And almost everybody, Carl's the one who died almost.
He died in the 80s.
He died in the 80s, and that's like 15 years later.
It's a dizzying film. I can see why you're...
I did just absorb it again and was reading up on all these things, so I'm kind of maybe, through this sheer enthusiasm, just sure. Now I'm embellishing the truth.
Fair enough.
it invites that.
Yes.
Let's face it, because Jason did that. He was always mythologizing his own life until, you know, she was trying to shatter through that.
A fabulist.
You're right. Exactly. And the film is, in a way, a fiction version of the truth, even though I'm sure anybody who lived through that day who saw it would probably be quite impressed and accept your version, because it's been now going on 30 years. What is it? It was 67.
So it's 66.
50 years. It's been like 50 years. I guess what I'm doing is condensing time in my mind, because it just makes me feel old.
Well, also feels relevant. Like everything that the film, yes, everything does. That Portrait of Jason, yes, has, and everything that Jason and Shirley has, right, is just as relevant today.
But if the film feels vintage, but it feels brand new. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why that. You like that?
I love that. That's why I shot on Super VHS. Because
I know. Well, I was going to get to that too. Like, I was on this podcast. This is a sort of sidebar, which they had these long conversations about cult classics.
Yes.
And somebody had to send me a related film to watch. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the film we were discussing, but it was related to the film that we were discussing. Yeah. So they want us to kind of take in everything associated with the source film. So yeah, it's like if somebody said, we're going to be talking about The Portrait of Jason, but I want you to watch Jason and Shirley too, or yeah, the other way around. You know, it's like, so I was watching this other film, and it was a digital file. It was like, you know, a QuickTime file, but it was conversion from a VHS. So the first thing that I'm watching is tracking on this QuickTime files is the film tracking, you know. So that was kind of fun. And that kind of transports you right back into that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've only seen that once before recently, and I don't know whose inspiration that was to shoot with video.
Mine.
Okay.
Yeah,
we don't need to discuss the other film, but it's called Computer Chess. You know.
Oh, I love Computer Chess.
Yeah, yeah. They did it. I mean, they sort of
was
had
that the VHS?
Same, I believe they shot it on video. On old video cameras.
It was an old video camera.
Yeah,
it wasn't Super VHS. It was an old video.
Is that what SVHS?
SVHS is a tape.
So okay, and then what do you do to get those great effects and all that?
We transferred it to a digital and cut on Avid. You know, but.
What I'm asking, I suppose, is there is tracking. There are,
yes,
right, and then there is like moments where there's. It's like
we put some of those in.
How do you do that?
Oh, it's just After Effects.
Okay.
I mean, what using the Super VHS camera meant giving up control over what you're going to get, just like similar to 16.
Right. It's sort of like turning on the light in the dark room,
yeah,
like flashing
yeah,
something like that, where you don't know what's going to turn out, but it's going to be great no matter what.
Sometimes it waves by itself. You know,
yeah.
If tape was unpredictable.
Right.
And it's an old technology. Sometimes it would have a mind of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And we just decided to run with all that stuff,
mm-hmm,
and keep the tracking.
Whatever happened was... It organic.
We knew the cameras worked. We knew the tapes were fresh. So we just kept it moving, and it worked. It was a roll of the dice, but we worked. Yeah.
Well, the name of the film we're now talking about is called Jason and Shirley. Again, it's a narrative film version of what that day might have been like with this 12-hour shoot.
Yes.
2 hours of which, or thereabouts, so, give or take, made it into this documentary that Shirley made in the mid to late 60s. And now this film is brand new, Jason and Shirley. And if you're in New York, it's actually going to have its
world premiere
at BAM Cinema Fest.
Yes,
it's pretty prestigious. And then I didn't know if I inserted that before, so I wanted to make sure people knew what we're talking about and keep people on track here.
Yeah.
So you shot it there, so it had this what would you call it? A very authentic kind of look. At the same time, also, yeah, the set, the clothing,
all created
style. It's fantastic. I mean, really.
Thank
looks
you.
Looks very authentic.
I put together a great team, and they all were at the top of their game, and
we're
all making the same movie. It's brilliant when everyone's making the same movie.
Right.
And a lot of folks, it was their first film, So it was just great to see everyone step up. Like, they really believed in the project. They believed in the message of the project. And they believed in Jack Waters, who was playing Jason, because they knew he was going to just serve it up to the stars. And Lord, did he ever.
He really did an incredible performance. He gave an incredible performance. Where'd you find him?
I've known Jack for years. He's a Lower East Side performance artist, filmmaker, dancer, director, choreographer. He's just a guy. He's been in New York since the 70s, I believe, him and his partner, Peter Kramer. And we just know each other forever. And he and Sarah Schulman are best friends.
Right. You mentioned before that she said, let's collaborate with Jack and the show play. And
Jack had been thinking about the character for a few years.
Oh, really? To maybe doing something?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. And so it had been germinating within him. And, and he told Sarah about it. And Sarah had the light bulb to bring me in and to devise a film.
Yeah. I don't really have... I haven't seen her on film. I haven't seen her. I don't know if what that performance is. If you were, and how much you were going... I mean, with Jack, clearly you caught... I mean, you can watch even a trailer for the original documentary Portrait of Jason and see the resemblance and the likeness and what a great sort of job he did. But I'm not familiar with
Well, she's primarily an author and a journalist.
Right.
And she's a teacher and she does speeches everywhere and she's a great interviewer. And she writes plays. She's also a playwright. So for 30 years, she's been working in the theater, working in journalism, working in activism. Mm-hmm. She'd acted a couple of times, but, you know, it wasn't her thing. But she knew she could do this. You know, and I knew she could do this.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't think that she would call herself an actress, but she definitely knew she could do this. And that's so that's pretty much.
Yeah, she really played her. I mean, I don't know how much you want to give away about Shirley's character, you know, and but there was this very ruthlessness to her.
Sure.
In terms of, like, she wanted a performance out of Jack. Interesting.
Out of Jason.
Probably of Jack too. Or
it's funny that Jack Shirley, and Jason and Shirley and Sarah had the same letters.
Yes.
So many parallels.
Yes. Right. Shirley wanted, in a way, even though she would call it getting beyond the performance, but she was looking for a performance because she wanted cinema.
Yeah.
She wanted this guy to have the nervous breakdown and get into it and really get honest and get raw. And
that was her thing.
Yeah. Like a Sandy Meisner or a Lee Strasberg. She's saying, you know, she's giving him motivating him to really go deep, and but in a very ruthless way, you know. It's painful.
Yeah. I mean, and that is an emotional mirror of how you hear her in the original Portrait of Jason.
Yeah. Okay. I assumed.
Yeah. You don't see Shirley in Portrait of Jason, but you hear her voice.
Right. Okay.
She's always she did the then breakthrough creative decision of interrupting her cinema verite documentary with the audio of her voice talking to Jason, talking to people in the room. It's very groundbreaking.
Well, the verite is an interview.
Yeah.
So it's a verite version, but within an interview format, because it's not...
What no one had done was put it into that kind of an emotional place.
Yeah.
Documentaries at that point, when you hear someone talking, it's very, you know, removed. You know? So tell us about the XYZ.
Right.
And she was like, come on, man, give us something real, you know, to sum up in a phrase.
And when he resisted, she was like trying to provoke him.
She would provoke him. She would lash out. She would, but at the same time, you know, I was always angry at Shirley Clark because
historically,
because of my emotional reaction as a
your heart
gay
went
person.
Out to him. Sure.
Your heart goes out to Jason
with him on some level.
He seems to be being abused.
Right.
That's part of what the controversy that has followed the film for 50 years is it exploitation?
And he's on the fringe and he doesn't have a defense.
And
who's defending him? Who's taking care of him? She's got money. She's got, you know, a nice middle class lifestyle or even upper class lifestyle.
Yeah, she's well to do, it would appear.
Yeah.
And also he is.
She mentions at one point her father was an industrialist.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Which is true. She was definitely from the upper classes.
Yeah.
That's part of also what dogged her reputation, because in her day the men said she was a dilettante.
Sure.
You know, just coming around, moving into Chelsea and trying to make some art.
Yeah.
My discovery going through it was, well, yes, she was all those things. And maybe she wasn't the nicest woman in the world, But what film director isn't ruthless? Kubrick was ruthless. I'm sure Spielberg is ruthless in his own way. When a director needs to get their shot, you got to get your shot. And
we call, maybe it's a gender thing where we will call them passionate. We'll have other terms for them. Let's put it that way.
Right.
With her, we're calling her ruthless.
Ruthless.
That's my own.
And she was ruthless. And her methods are questionable.
Yeah.
Her goals, you certainly can take issue with. Her brilliance is not to be debated.
Right.
And that's part of where I got to in making this film. It's like, oh, well, it's not like she's a bad person. She is just a person in the system that she's questioning. The thumb is on her neck as a woman as much as anybody else, mm-hmm. although arguably Jason as a black, gay, destitute male prostitute is lower. There's all these different things swirling around. And that's what I decided to get into, was the swirl,
yeah.
and not the judgment of it. Mm-hmm. Although I would never say that I was able to heal from my relationship with Shirley Clark by making the film.
Okay, so there was.
Does that make sense?
It sounded like you didn't have a vendetta, but you weren't necessarily completely forgiving.
Well, for 20 years, I had a piss. I was pissed off.
Yeah,
you know. But when I got into it, I realized it's not about trying to rectify some pissed off feeling about a one woman artist who lived many years ago. It is about exploring what it all means.
Yeah,
you know, what does it mean to be in power? What does it mean to want power? Both of those characters, Shirley and Jason, can speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to make the film about. You know, but you know, that's what Sarah Schulman was in complete agreement with this. You know, mm-hmm. I definitely put her in charge of making Shirley's character as full as possible. You know, like I remember one time we were discussing when I was still working out the story. I brought up, well, does she have a female assistant? And she goes, no. Shirley Clark would never have a female assistant. Shirley Clark would only have men on her set. And I was like, ah, you're absolutely right. Shirley Clark would not have a female assistant in 1966. She would not. Nobody did in film.
Right.
So, you know, so it was good to be in accord, you know, and to give as much respect to this historical figure as I was going to critique it.
Is anybody alive from that set? Any survivors?
People in the crew are still alive.
Uh-huh.
The crew members I have in my film are totally fictionalized. So they're not based on anybody who was actually there.
Okay.
But yes, there are survivors in the crew. And there are certainly survivors of people who were in that circle,
mm-hmm.
who knew Shirley, who were at the first screening, et cetera. So Jonas Mekas, who is one of the founders of the wonderful anthology. He was a Shirley Clark contemporary, and I was just told he's coming to the world premiere.
No.
That's what they said.
Is that right?
They said Jonas is coming.
It's incredible.
I can't wrap my mind around it, but that's what they said is.
Yeah, I know. I met him a number of times over the years, and his daughter is a friend, too. He has a very young daughter.
Oh, yeah?
His children are very young.
Really?
Yeah, he must have been in his 50s when he had children.
All right.
Because they're both, I think, 40-ish, maybe.
Yeah. He's 90.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, he's 50-plus.
That's very exciting.
He has two very good-looking kids. And
yeah. I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
My mother always told me, one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Jason.
Keep something for 7 years.
Jason by Shirley Clark.
You'll find use for it. Problem with unemployment is, as soon as you wake up, you're on the job.
Don't feel like you have to put on a show. You know, just be yourself.
Boom.
Just talk like an interview.
Ooh-wee. Why do Jewish divorces cost so much? Because they're worth it.
Nico, why don't you light this cigarette before you sit on my face?
Light a cigarette.
You're giving the audience what they want.
What they think they want.
Come in! Everybody come on, come in!
I mean, do you have a feeling of what maybe a Shirley might have thought of this film if she had seen it?
You know, here's the thing. Like I said before, I knew it was very important that this is an imaginative story based on historical events.
Right.
And that what I was trying to go through was the emotional truth of what happened that day rather than the factual truth.
Sure.
So I avoided Shirley Clark research until after we were done shooting. And then I just looked it up for my own amusement to see how close we got. She was a tough cookie. Yeah. She had a joie de vivre.
Uh-huh.
The parties at her apartment were legendary, apparently. She hung out mostly with artists and black men and jazz people. And she was never afraid to be the one to say no to a concept or an issue or a question. And she understood that the battle that she was fighting for recognition, even though she was recognized, to get as far as the men would get, she knew that was never really going to happen in her lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
It would appear. So I would hope that she would be very tickled by a mythological figure based mm-hmm. on her mm-hmm. popping up 50 years later. And like as it should be. You know, of all the films and books and lore that has gone around the Chelsea Hotel, she is one of the more overlooked subjects up until a few years ago when she started coming back into.
Yeah, and the film has been restored and reissued. And came out recently on a new Blu-ray, I think.
It's fabulous. Okay. With a lot of extras and all the good stuff.
I gotta get that.
So I think she would be pleased by it. You know, her take on who Jason Holliday was after the fact, the interviews I've read, made it clear that she felt it was a difficult day, difficult subject, but worth doing and a successful job. And I think we show that too in Jason and Shirley, that she was pleased with her work. So, and maybe she might even think that my critiques are fair. I think that, well, because she's dead, I think that when your soul leaves the earthly confines, you get to have a more of a balanced view of things. And such things that you thought were important when you're alive certainly become less important after you move forward. So I think above all, she would be very happy that she's being discussed.
I'm sure.
And that she's coming back.
Of course. It's
she
like...
should be legend. And he should be legend. And I hope that through Jason and Shirley, those legends will, like, she'll go up on the roster with all the great women directors, or and all the great directors, despite gender, and that he will go on the roster of the great cultural figures and the great thinkers and the great resistance people. He should be next to Angela Davis as much as he should be next to Quentin Crisp or Oscar Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
They both straddle a lot of worlds. And I wanted to, which of race and class and gender and sexuality and art and politics. And I wanted that all to be in there.
I think job well done.
Mission
accomplished. The film is going to be coming up soon at the Frameline.
We're playing June 23rd.
What's the name of the festival?
The Frameline Festival in San Francisco.
LGBTQ Festival.
Yes.
And
biggest in the West Coast.
Beautiful. Where is it?
At the Victoria Theater on the 23rd.
Okay.
And then on July 11th, it'll be the opening night of the Platinum section of Outfest.
Wow.
At the Red Cat Theater in downtown LA.
But I haven't seen it. I mean, and the fact that it's at BAM Cinema Fest is
the only world premiere.
It should
at the
be, and I don't mean this in any negative way. It should not be ghettoized either as a some sort of niche film. It's a film everybody should really know that it's about filmmaking and it's about relating and it's about a particular time in New York. It's a number of different things going on here.
That's really the message I want to give out. Some people will say it's a black film. It's not a black film. Some people will say it's an LGBTQ film. It is not that either. Some people will say that it's an art film, an experimental film. It's not. It's a straight-up narrative.
True.
And it is unique in its universality and its adaptability. That's the way I designed it. And it's also designed to be a mind trip. I wanted it to be like an experience. Like, you go through this and you come out the other end, like at the end of a roller coaster. Panting, excited, ready to do it again, a little freaked out, butterflies in your stomach, but happy,
mm-hmm.
uplifted, just like a roller coaster. There's newfangled ones that go up and down and fly around and Or no, it was it's a wooden roller coaster. Let me be. It's wooden.
Yeah. Hold on tight, and don't be too afraid of the rattling. The rickety and the rattling.
I love the rattling.
It's like being on the cyclone. thanks so much.
Thank you. This is great. I'm really glad that you got it, and that you're excited.
It's right up my alley. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. You know, if you're not already a subscriber to Fandor, you can get a free 2-week trial subscription. And then for a very small amount of money every month, you can become a subscriber. And there's tons of art films and festival films, shorts, mid-length films. I mean, it's all up there for many of these films, which come from all over the world. This is probably one of the only places you can view many of these titles. So I can't recommend Fandor any stronger. So go visit Fandor.com. Can I also suggest you take a look at their blog? It's called Keyframe, and there's a link right on the homepage of Fandor, or you can Google Keyframe and Fandor and come up. But read Keyframe. It's got great articles and video components, and my podcast even is up there. So thank you to everybody at Fandor and to Keyframe for their continuing collaboration and partnership with me. And we'll be back again soon with another episode focusing on what's going on with that company and Fandor. There is more coming up. Trust me. Thank you for listening to this episode of Film Wax Radio. I'm the host. My name is Adam Chartoff. Until next time, take care.
There's just something about this hotel got me wishing I was dead. Gotta get out of New York City, son. Somewhere I can clear my head. I was just kicking along the sidewalk. No one looks you in the eyes. No one asks you how you're doing. Don't seem to care if you live or if you die. Just got to get me some.